You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along. Good to have you with us again here on the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner in the studio with Dave Tindall live on Skype to look forward to this week's two events. We have the WGC Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone and the Barracuda Championship. A warm welcome to Mr. Dave Tindall. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. Looking forward to this week, but as ever, before we get stuck into the two events, quick reflection on last week. Another good week on the podcast for you, Dave.
Yeah, it kind of went well from the off. I spoke about Retief Goosen saying he looked a good round one leader bet, and he shared top spot after day one with Ishikawa, so that was nice. I don't think there was any prices at the time, but I think he was about 80s, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was 80 to 1.
Yeah, to be first round leader, so half the stakes, so that was good. And then in the main event, well, over the 4 days, I said Greg Owen. Luckily, I got him in the right market there, because I put him up for top 20 at 9-2, and he was tied 15th, so he kind of, he listened. He didn't, so there was no disappointment on any level with that bet.
It was one of those where you want him to be tied 15th, not tied 4th, and not 3rd, and definitely not win the championship when you're on a top 20 bet like that.
Well, even tied 9th, you know, it would have thought, oh, I could have done top 10 there, but tied 15th was perfect. He had a bit of a poor Saturday. I did kind of harbour hopes of something a bit better, because I did throw a few quid on him at 125s, but he went backwards Saturday, but he had a nice final round, and he keeps doing it, doesn't he, Greg Owen? So maybe another one to look out for in those sort of markets. And then there was the other one. Oh, Jason Bone was in about a 37-way title fourth, but just about scraped the crumbs off the table to get an each-way profit there.
What about the winner, Troy Merritt? Superb over the 4 days, particularly on Saturday and Sunday. That came on the back of 5 missed cuts. Closed out impressively, but he was one of those where sometimes in hindsight you can look back and think, yeah, I could have had him. Troy Merritt, not one of those winners.
Well, unless you were on him at, was it Hilton Head where he played really well?
He did.
Unless you sort of backed him there and then taken your eye off the ball a bit and then just thought, oh, Troy Merritt. But yeah, to be honest, there seemed no real reason why he should do so well there. But he was very impressive. I kept waiting on Sunday for the inevitable sort of fold, but it didn't happen. I would have thought, you know, he would have seen Ricky Fowler's name or Rose's name on the leaderboard and thought, oh, here we go. But he was just note perfect, wasn't he, all the way through? And holing the putt at the last, it was like, blimey, that's just that's perfection, isn't it? That's how you've dreamt of winning your first event, by doing something like that, and full credit to him.
That was one of the great quotes after his round on Sunday, when he was asked about that hole in that final putt, and he said, I just tried to lag it up there to 2 feet, and if I'd lagged it up there to 2 feet, I'd have lagged the next one as well. which I loved. Impressive way to finish for Troy Merritt. What about the other event, the inaugural edition of the Paul Laurie Match Play? Kiradek Appibhanat outlasting Robert Carlson to win one up. Turned out to be a terrific event, I thought. A cracking venue as well, Dave.
It was good. The only thing I would say was it was a bit of a head scratch, wasn't it? What were they doing in the final, those two? It's like, we're... I couldn't really see how that could have happened. Carlson was in no sort of form at all. And Appibhanat, you wouldn't have thought...
He didn't have any links form, did he, Appibhanat?
Oh, really? No, you would have thought a tight track in Scotland wasn't exactly reminding him of Asia. Or I know he's sort of, I mean, he won in China very well, but I didn't see those two. But they played great golf. And, yeah, I enjoyed that event. Yeah, it was... it's on there for the next 2 years, I think. I don't know after that. But, it's one that will hopefully attract a few more names next time as well.
Yeah, and I know it was hard to envisage those two battling out the final, but you looked at the last eight, Dave, that was littered with players that had shown good links form this season, and you would have expected to be suited to that event.
Yeah, it went to form, didn't it, for a while, with sort of Ramsey and Mark Warren and David Howell all doing well. And then it just at the end, it kind of went a bit kind of against the form book. But I guess there were some prices out there, weren't there, if people wanted to oppose the favourites in some of those later matches. So well done if you did. But I don't know what odds. What was he, Yaffe Barnard? Do we know?
I have no idea. Off the top of my head, he wasn't one that I considered, though, at all, really. That's 3 wins in 50-odd events for Yaffe Barnard, so that's a good strike rate by anyone's reckoning.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, you wonder maybe next time he's due to do something in a major on some level, maybe. He's played well in, I think he was 6th at Bay Hill or something like that earlier in the season, so he's certainly a young player who could do big things.
Let's get stuck into this week then, Mr. Tindall, and we've got a biggie, the WGC Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone South, and Jordan Spieth back in action. He is 11-2, Dustin Johnson 14-1, Jason Day 14-1, Justin Rose 14-1, Adam Scott and Ricky Fowler both 16s, Louis Oosthuizen is 22s, and it's 25s and bigger the rest here with William Hill. Dave, this is one of the most prestigious events on the PGA Tour schedule. The field has all the major names, apart from Rory McIlroy, who continues his rehabilitation from that ankle ligament injury. Apparently, Dave, is set to play a practice round at Whistling Straits this weekend. Well, it would be incredible, wouldn't it?
I've just seen on Twitter that's not true anymore.
Ah, is that a fallacy?
Apparently, I just on my timeline, it just went past with a capital N-O-T. He's not due to play practice rounds.
Right, okay, because that was all the talk on Monday, yeah. Wasn't it?
Which it did seem unlikely, didn't it? But, I'd be surprised if he plays in that, to be honest. Or he could maybe hobble to the start, but he's surely not going to be a factor next week, I wouldn't have thought.
It's not worth the risk, is it, if he's not fully rehabilitated? You'd think that he's got to be looking at his career in terms of its longevity.
Yeah, he should just think, well, all right, I bagged 2 last year, I'm not going to win 1 this year, let's get myself fully right for kind of next year, or you know, next year's Masters, and I'll have another good run at them then. But yeah, it's pointless. I mean, if you look at someone like Tiger Woods, probably played through, I mean, Tiger Woods, the last major he won was on one leg, wasn't it? And then it kind of shows that, and then since then he's not won any. Maybe just too much damage and maybe ignored things. I did read a book where Tiger sort of enjoyed the sort of, you know, getting the battle wounds, because it made him feel like other players in other sports, you know, where golf was maybe a bit sissy-ish because you didn't get good injuries. But so Tiger used to sort of like to sort of grind his way through them. But no, if you're Rory McIlroy, you'd just think, nah, forget this year. This is kind of Spieth's year. I'm going to come back better and bigger and better next time.
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed. We'll talk about the USPGA Championship on next week's podcast. Looking forward to that immensely. As for this event, Dave, the host venue once again, Firestone South in Akron, Ohio, known as the Monster, the longest par 70 on the PGA Tour, measuring 7,400 yards. One of the par 5s is reachable for all the field. The other par 5 cannot be reached by any of the field. So there's a disparity there. And looking through the roll call of winners of this championship, the one thing that stands out is that the cream has a tendency to rise to the top in this event. Tiger Woods has won it 8 times. And last year, Rory McIlroy put in an extremely solid all-round performance to beat Sergio Garcia by 2 strokes. It's a quality event, this one.
Yeah, very much so, Dave, and I'd expect that trend to continue this week. It's one of those ones where I normally kind of ignore driving accuracy. I think it's a slightly flawed stat, because you have got opportunity to, you know, go in with a shorter club if you do bomb it a long way. But if you look at the records of like Dustin Johnson and Bubba Watson, they're pretty terrible, aren't they, at this course?
Yes.
Well, I think there's something in it. I think you do need that kind of combination of long and straight on this course. If you look at the players who have done well, I think they are, you know, good ball strikers with good total driving stats. So, yeah, I think some of the favourites you can eliminate this week, I think, such as DJ and Bubba Watson. So I think that helps it narrow it down a little bit, although there are then, that does leave players who do both things well. I mean, one stat one kind of overall stat that I like is that the last five winners of this event topped the all-around ranking for that week of their win.
Okay. Yeah, I like that as well, because it shows you need a pure ball striker, I think, for this venue.
Yeah, pure ball striker who can then scramble well on top of that and also putt nicely. So I think it is a really good all-round test. So I think, you know, if you can find the fairways, if you're two, we talked, didn't we, the other week about indiscriminate bombers just sort of hitting it anywhere.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned Tony Finau as the one who doesn't really care what a fairway is. But yeah, I think you do need both this week, probably more so than next week, to be fair.
I've got three picks for this event, Dave.
I've got two. So
okay.
By symmetry, you should go first.
Yeah, I'll lead us off here. I'm going with Jim Furyk as my headline selection here. He has been clipped in the betting. This must have happened within the last 15 minutes or so, but he was 40s. He's been clipped into 35 to 1 now. Got to stick with him at this stage, though, and I'll play him a point each way, Jim Furyk, at 35 to 1. Full transparency there as well, Dave, because I could have maybe taken the 40s, yeah, but I'd never do that. 35 to 1 seems...
Karma coming your way.
35 to 1 seems fair still. I know that many will maybe reference his lack of winning form as a problem, but I think that win at Harbour Town earlier on this season was a huge moment in his career, and he's put in some very strong performances subsequently. Only beaten one up by McIlroy in the match play at the semi-final stage at Harding Park, and he's posted top fives at the Memorial, which is also played, incidentally, in Ohio, and a fortnight ago had a chance to win in the Canadian Open, an event which the big hitters dominated there. I don't think Furyk's the sort of player, Dave, that gets overawed by a long golf course, and he's got the profile I'm looking for. His record at Firestone South is superb. Finished in the top 15 in the last 3 years, including a runner-up finish in 2012. And you look through some of his stats, they read well as well. 7th on tour in strokes gained tee to green, 24th in greens in regulation, which is another key stat this week. That bodes well, and he's also scrambling superbly this season, Jim Furyk. A lot of people will look at his lack of length as a big negative. I actually don't see it that way. I don't think it's that big a negative this week, and I like him at 35s.
Yeah, that was a good argument, that. You know, I was getting more into it as you went along. I have to admit, he's not one that immediately came to mind, and I think I probably was put off by...
Yeah,
you know, lack of length. I think maybe he'll be a you know, tied third or something. When I think I was trying to sort of nail the winner when I was looking at the top end. But yeah, I think that's a working man's each way price, isn't it? 35s.
I'd be happy with the top five finish, Dave.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. Yes. My go.
Yes, you go.
Yes, I'll go fairly obvious. My first pick, Justin Rose, 14 to 1 he is with us. Back to that idea of the last five winners topping the all-round ranking. Well, Rose topped that last week at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Course in the Quicken Loans. Came fourth there, and that followed on from a tied six at the Open. Now, tied six at the Open sounds good, but it's actually a bit better than you think, because that was actually his best ever Open as a pro.
Mm.
We all remember him in his baggy clothes. He was into the Stone Roses or something back in there, 1997, or was it 1998? But his record in the Open since then was rubbish. So finally he got in a good performance in an Open, tied six, built on that with the tied fourth. And as I say, did everything well last week. Now he comes to a golf course that's going to really suit those kind of big, powerful, long, high hitters. I mean, he showed that when he was runner-up at the Masters this year. And obviously he's got form on this course. Runner-up quite a few years back, so you might think that's a bit old, 2007, but top five 2012, top four last year, also shot tied 17th in between those two with 369s. I just think this is a really, really sort of Justin Rose type of course.
Yeah.
14 to 1 is kind of reflecting that, but I think he'll be very competitive. I think he will make a big, big title push. And I think he's due one, isn't he? He's not won this year, so 14 to 1. I think there's a I know I like 16s as my little each way kind of benchmark, but 14s is okay. And I think he's the one to beat. I genuinely do. Even though Jordan Spieth's in the field, I just think if there is a tiny weakness with Spieth, it's his driving.
Yes.
Maybe it's not great in each element, straight or long. I mean, if he wins, doesn't he? And he can't feign any sort of surprise. But obviously, when he won at Augusta, you've got a lot of room off the tee there, which kind of compensates for some of his shorter drives. But if you are going to go in the rough, you know, and he's going in at a lesser distance than some of the others, he might just be worth taking on. So I think Rose is maybe the one to beat. So 14-1, Justin Rose. I'll probably go 2 points each way. I'm pretty confident about this one.
Okay, Justin Rose, a confident selection at 14-1. Just on Jordan Spieth, he's one of those players where nothing would shock you, would it? The way he's playing golf this season, it wouldn't be at all a surprise if he just popped up at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday again.
Yeah, and he won the week before the last major, so it's not like he's got one eye on the sort of bigger prize. He just goes out and wins wherever, doesn't he?
My second selection here, Dave, I'm going with Billy Horschel at 60-1 as my second pick. Put him up at the players at a very similar price, and he played well to finish in 13th in the end. But when we've talked about this event, we talked about ball strikers, and he is a top quality. When he's at his absolute best, a top quality ball striker, he's subsequently, following that 13th place at the players, gone on to finish 11th at the Memorial and then finished 8th in the St. Jude before mid-division finishes at the US Open and the Open Championship. Maybe lacks a little bit of experience of the golf course, which is the only slight hesitation I've got with Horschel. He's only played here once. That was back in 2013. Three rounds in the 70s, and then he closed with a 66. I don't want to put too much emphasis on that 66 because that came when he was well back in the pack. And sometimes when the pressure is off, Dave, we see this week in, week out, a player can produce around in the mid-60s when there's no real feeling that they've got a chance to win. So it does alleviate some of that pressure. But I think this is a golf course that sets up nicely for Billy Horschel, who can drive it long and straight. And I'm going with him at 60-1. Putting might not be put under as much pressure as it would be on another week either, which I think is good for Horschel because that putting stroke can look a little bit poppy on occasion and not like Snedeker's pop stroke. It looks like it's out of control sometimes. So he'll want a good ball striking week, Billy Horschel.
Yeah, that's a nice price, I think, for him. My second pick, again, I'm looking fairly close to the top of the betting. Hideki Matsuyama is my second pick. I think he's a player who hits it long and straight. He's 37th in driving accuracy, which you might not think, maybe. So he's hitting more fairways than most of these market leaders. He's fourth in the all-around, which I think is a big stat this week, which again bodes well. I think he really plays well on these sort of courses that kind of, you know, well-manicured, fast greens. We've seen him win just down... I'm not quite... When I say down the road, it's probably quite a long road to Memorial. I'm sort of reducing the size of American states to kind of the size of British counties. Because people were saying Jason Day sort of lives near the course. Well, apparently he's 2 hours away. So
not around the corner, is it?
No. But Matsuyama has won in this state. I think it's more the fact that he won on a course with similar attributes. Obviously, at the Masters, perfectly manicured with fast greens. Fifth there this year. Also, he made the cut at Augusta twice as an amateur. And just his form, Dave, it's ridiculous. It's like he's not finished worse than 23rd in his last 11 events. I mean, that goes back to February.
Yeah.
I didn't quite realise it was that good until I sort of had quite a delve into the exact results. And he's got, this year, 2015, he's got a 33% top five strike rate.
Nice. So,
he's 28-1 this week. So just on those numbers alone, he stands out. But I think particularly on this course, he should do well. I mean, that's the theory that he should play well. We've actually got the evidence because he's played here twice before. He finished 21st on debut and then tied 12th last year. So you can see that progression. You can see there's an obvious way it's going to kick on. And I fully expect him to be in the mix this week. He did return to Japan to play an event a couple of weeks ago, closed with a 64, so that adds another little layer of confidence. I'm quite glad it was 2 weeks ago. He was coming straight from Japan to here. I think, that's a bit of a scupperer, but he's had that little bit of time to acclimatise. I just can't pick a hole in you know, his form or his chance this week. So I think at 28-1, I'd much prefer him to some of those like DJ and Bubba. So 28-1, Matsuyama is quite a strong each-way pick for me.
Yeah, I love that. I think he was the last one off my list, Hideki Matsuyama. If you hadn't gone for him, Dave, he might have been the player that I don't want to win at the end of the podcast, and right, he still might be. 28-1, Hideki Matsuyama. He does look very, very solid this week with those stats and those recent form figures as well. I'm just going to take a little chance, and this is a half point each way on Brooks Koepka as my final selection at 50-1.
I like him for next week, so I'm kind of don't want him to kind of blow his cover this week.
Yeah, he could go well next week. I think you've always got to monitor those USPGA championship prices on the, because this is such a big, strong field event on a big golf course, that if your player is going well, or if there's someone going well that you like for next week at Whistling Straits, you've got to jump on early, I think.
Yeah.
So 50-1 Brooks Koepka. He's got no experience of the venue. I just can't let him go off unbacked at that price. He's such an incredibly exciting prospect. We know he hits it a mile. He's form strong as well. Not finished outside the top 25 in his last five starts. Threatened in Canada a couple of weeks ago before fading with a disappointing 74. He's a player that I like a lot, and I just want him on side at 50s. Not entirely convinced that this golf course will suit him perfectly. He'll need to find a few more fairways, I think, this week. But at 50-1, I'll play him half a point each way as a sneaky little bet. I just couldn't leave him out.
Yeah, he's the same price, isn't he, for the USPGA, 50s as well. So my argument would be, I think next week's course suits him far better.
No, that could be correct.
But then again, is there a different pressure on him because that's a major and this isn't? I don't think he's one of these who's probably not bothered by that. I think he's just a bit of a dude, isn't he? I think he's not sort of gets all caught up in it being something bigger than it is. I think he just plays the tournament in front of him. But I do think this course, he might just miss a few too many fairways. Whereas if you look at 2010 at Whistling Straits, I know we'll talk about this more next week, but it was the Bubba and DJ show for a lot of it, wasn't it? Even though Martin Keimer won it, but two massive hitters obviously came to the fore that time. Rory nearly won it as well, didn't he, in 2010?
I think he should have won it in 2010. Yeah. I thought he played great golf, McIlroy.
If it was just the Rory that was now, you know, the four-time major winner, I think he might well have done that week. But I think big hitters were to the fore, very much so in that event. Also, I think I remember at the time, I also, I think a thing with the USPGA, I'm banging on about the USPGA now, but I will come back to this week in a minute. All those who seemed to play well in it had won that year as well. I think that's a big USPGA sort of pointer. Pick a player who's already won this season.
Yeah.
Or that same season. And DJ had won, and so had Bubba. So that's again, because Koepka won in Phoenix this year.
Yes.
So he ticks every box for me. So, I don't know. Like you say, though, you've just got to be aware, haven't you? Because the problem is, if he shoots like 9 under in round one, his price will get cut, and then he could still go on and finish 38th. So they're quite sensitive, aren't they, this close to majors, these price cuts. So, why not split your stake, having 50-1 this week and 50-1 next?
You could definitely do that. If he shoots 9 under on Thursday, by the way, I'll be doing cartwheels somewhere. So I'll be injured for next week as well. Before we move on to the Barracuda Championship, any others worthy of mention? I mean, we've got 5 picks in that event, haven't we? We've gone all different in terms of selection. So we've got that one well covered, I think.
I think I did want to focus at the front end.
Yeah, I did as well.
Given recent results. There were a few at sort of tasty prices, just kind of informed players such as Danny Lee. I think he's come top five his last four event or three of his last four, including a win. Robert Streb's obviously in very good form. I thought you might have picked one of these, Dave, given your liking for.
Yeah, I do like Danny Lee a lot. 80-1. I just prefer Horschel at 60s, and I did like Fioric at 35s as well. I think this is a week where you need a big time player. I think anyway, a player that's won some big events. Obviously, that goes against the theory for Koepka, but I think Koepka's in a. I think Koepka's such an exciting young prospect. I'm not going to compare him to Jordan Spieth because they're incomparable, but you know, one of those next echelon players, those just the step behind him.
Plus, he's done a lot of winning, hasn't he? He's obviously won a lot on the Challenge Tour, then he won in Turkey, and then he's won on the PGA Tour already. So, yeah, you can just see him flying, can't you, in the next few years. But, yeah, Lee and Streb, good form. Ben Martin's good price, 125-1. Played quite well in some big events, was leading the US Open at one point.
Yeah.
Missed the playoff at the Players by a shot. He's a winner as well, so he could be one. But I think I would rather just focus my staking plan right at the front end and just on those two, Rose and Matsuyama for me.
Superb. Let's have a look at the Barracuda Championship then. This is the opposite event on the PGA Tour. We've got 14-1 co-favourites of three here. Austin Cook, Brendan Steele and Jeff Ogilvie, all 14s. Andres Romero and Will Wilcox, both 20s. Olli Schneiderjans is 25s. Adam Hadwin, 28s. 33-1 for Bryce Mulder, Jonathan Bird, Kyle Stanley and Retief Hoosen. And it's 40s and bigger the remainder. Jeff Ogilvie, the defending champion in the Barracuda this week. Dave, and this is the only Stableford event on the tour as well. It's the player that gets the highest score at the end of the week that wins rather than the lowest. And players get 8 points for an albatross, 5 points for an eagle, 2 points for a birdie, nothing for a par, lose 1 point for a bogey, and lose three for a double or worse.
So you turned into Bruce Forsyth.
Do you think the mindset changes this week for these players, or do you think they just treat it like a normal event?
I don't know. I like the scoring system in this one. It somehow seems easier to score well. I don't know, psychologically. I don't quite know why. But I think my theory on this one, because it's got a bit of a quirky scoring system and it's played kind of very high above sea level, about 5,000 feet or something, is that right? Mm. Something like that. The ball flies high, doesn't it? It's one of those ones.
I know it's at altitude. I don't know the exact.
Yeah. It's certainly played at altitude. So you need a bit. I think you need experience in this event. If you look at some of the winners, obviously Ogilvie last year, JJ Henry won it in 2012 when... I think he's not as old as you think, but he's sort of late 30s when he won that. Scott Pierce is in his sort of mid-30s. Matt Bettencourt won it before that. He's sort of knocking on a bit. John Rollins before that. I think that a lot of experienced players have come to the fore in this event. So that would be my first kind of line of thinking. Whereas, you know, someone like Olli Schneiderjans, he's made a great start to his pro career, but maybe this might just be a bit of a tricky event for him maybe to continue that. I've got one pick. How about yourself?
I've got one pick. And just to elaborate on what you were saying, Dave, quickly, I have a tendency to look for a player that takes advantage of the slight drop in grade. You know, like, if you look at three of the last four winners, there are those types, in my opinion. Jeff Ogilvie last year, Gary Woodland in 2013, Scott Piercy in 2011. And, of course, Piercy this year... has already won an opposite event, hasn't he? I know he's not in this field, but he won at the Barbasol. Just those guys that have been knocking on the door in PGA Tour events, but it's not quite in main PGA Tour events. It's not quite open, and a bit of pressure off in a lower grade, maybe.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's a week, where some players might put too much pressure on themselves to do that, You could also think, oh, it's a chance for someone really young to come through. But no, I prefer the line of thinking that it's a classier player with a bit of previous proven class, and that's certainly the player I'm going to pick who's going to come to the fore.
You know what? I've got a player of similar ilk, so maybe we're on the same one.
Is it the same one? Right.
Shall I go?
He's got the same initials as me. There's a clue.
Oh, no, we were not on the same one. You with David Toms?
Yes.
Go on, give us your reasoning then behind Toms at 40s.
He's got the same initials as me, and he's quite old like me. He's doing better than you think, isn't he, David Tom? Well, depends what you think. If you think he's doing really well, then he isn't. But David Toms, obviously he's not done a lot for a while since that player who played on lots of Ryder Cups, but last three starts, he's come 20th in the Travellers and 19th in the Barbasol. So he's sniffing around. Lots and lots of rounds in the 60s if you look at his cards. Three rounds in the 60s at the Barbasol, another at John Deere, three out of the four at the Travellers. Shot a second round 66 at St Jude. So he's making, I think he's making a lot of good scores, putting a lot of good scores together. Obviously, another little thing, JJ Henry won this. Well, Tom's played on the same Ryder Cup team as him, so it does show that this is an event where players with former glories, seems to be, if you did well in 2006, you'd do well in this event. Didn't Jeff Ogilvie win the US Open that year?
2007, wasn't it, I think, Winged Foot?
So it was 2006.
Maybe I'm wrong.
This 2007 was Cabrera, wasn't it?
Was it? This is off the top of my head, so I might have that wrong.
If you play well in 2006, you'll win here. How about that? But yeah, I just think Toms has got some nice stats. He's obviously always hit the ball straight. A lot of good driving accuracy stats in recent times. He's scrambling well. 80% scrambling figures in his last two tournaments. Got the putter rolling nicely as well. And obviously, it is a very old form. You can't get away from that. But his last four goes on this course, he was runner-up in 1999, seventh in 2000. Yeah, that is old. But he came back to play in 2013 and was 16th and shot some good numbers there. So I wasn't quite sure what price to expect given the quality of the field. But when I saw those recent two top 20s in his last three, I thought, well, he's not going to be too short. I wonder if they'll really collar him. But I think 40-1 is okay, I think, for David Toms. You take out all these players who are playing in the main event this time. And like you say, the drop in grade, it would be a classic kind of example of that, wouldn't it, if Toms were to get right in the mix. I don't know if he can win it. How old is David Toms? He must be Champions Tour.
He's almost bound, isn't he? He wouldn't be there yet, would he, I think? Would he be 47?
Are we both going into...
48 years.
Yeah, so I guess a lot of these guys, they want to keep the game sort of hot, don't they? Because they can see the sort of dollar signs before their eyes when they go on the Champions Tour. I mean, he could go berserk, David Toms, on the Champions Tour. So, but they do like to still cut it at this level. And this is an obvious week where his past course experience on what is a quirky layout because of the altitude and the scoring system, just that old head, which obviously worked for the likes of Ogilvie and Henry, I think it could apply to Toms this week. So even though initially I thought, this is one to swerve, I think 40-1 gives me a way into this tournament. So he's going to be my bet. I think I'm going to go a point each way, David Toms at 40s.
Good stuff. I like Jonas Blixt here quite heavily. I'm probably only play him a point each way in the end at 50-1, but I do fancy him. Blixt's two wins on the PGA Tour came in what you'd call lesser events, Dave, where the field isn't as strong. The Fries.com and the Greenbrier. And let's not forget that Blixt is a player that's been placed in a couple of major championships in the last 2 years, or the last 3 years now, placed in a Masters and in a USPGA as well. And the winner this week will have to make a lot of putts and have a decent short game, and they're Blixt's, historically, his biggest strengths. And he's come back to form recently, a 22nd place finish in Canada, and he was 30th last week at the Quicken Loans. And last week at the Quicken Loans, he ranked 7th in the all-around at the Robert Trent Jones track. And when you think about Blixt, his ball striking is often called into question, isn't it? For him to rank 7th in the all-around last week, I think was superb. He only had one bad round. That was his second round, 74. Apart from that, he was pretty solid all week, Jonas Blixton. He's played one time in Nevada, not in this championship, but played in the Shriners, so has experience of playing altitude, and finished third when he played in the Shriners back in 2012. Should have won on Sunday there.
Yeah.
Went into that final round and shot a 70, which was disappointing in the end. I think he's got a big chance this week, Jonas Blixt. I think he's playing well. If the putter lights up, 50-1's going to look like a strong price on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's a good argument for him. He's definitely a player who I sort of like to back when the opportunity presents. I normally try and wait for sort of massive prices on him because, as you say, he's got that brilliant short game that allows him to you know play well in majors. He had a great run, didn't he, at the USPGA? I think him and Stenson were sort of kind of battling to get in the mix there, and obviously at the Masters as well. So, and he's won twice, hasn't he? So.
Yeah,
he's no ordinary sort of bland PGA Tour pro, is he? I think there's something a bit about him. He just struggles for consistency.
I just look, Dave, at the players that are around him in the betting, and think these guys haven't got the profile of Jonas Blixt, and he's got that form in Nevada as well, coming off the back of two really decent weeks for Blixt as well, off the back of a horrible spell. I think if his ball striking's even half decent this week, he's going to find it with the putter at some point because he is that strong with the flat stick. Yeah. For instance, players like Vaughan Taylor and Ricky Barnes, both 40-1, 10 points shorter than Jonas Blixt, they might well win. I just don't see that.
Yeah, well, Taylor's won it twice, hasn't he? He's won it back-to-back. So I guess that's the large chunk of the reason why he's the short price.
Definitely.
But Blixt... Yeah, so it's just a matter of time, I think, before Blix shows up somewhere again. And why not here? We'll say he opened with a pair of 64s in that Nevada tournament that you mentioned. Must have sort of happy memories. He also, his first win was on the West Coast, wasn't it, in California. So maybe he likes the tour going over that way. So, yeah, I think we've picked out a couple of decent ones in that event, 40s and the 50s.
Yeah, I suppose with Taylor, you've got to duck him, haven't you, slightly, with those two wins in the mid-noughties. But they were 10 years ago now, so... Yeah. I like it. I like those two selections. Tom's at 40s and Blixt at 50-1.
Yeah, so it's nice for a bit of interest, isn't it, in the other event? Because just because it's the star names aren't there, it doesn't mean to say it's not a good betting heat. So I think we found a couple of decent ones there.
I was going to put up Matsuyama is the player that I don't want to win, but I won't do that, seeing as you've gone for him. I'll go with Adam Scott at 16-1 because it would be galling after what he did at the Open Championship if he went in this week. So yes. 16-1 Adam Scott, and he's obviously a past winner of the event at Bridgestone back in 2011 as well. So I suppose he's the man that I don't want to win this week.
Yeah, I always sort of go for Spieth, but I think Fowler. I think I was close to putting him up, but I didn't want another one in that same price bracket as Rose. I do slightly prefer Rose. Fowler did play some lovely golf at times last week. He should have won that, to be honest, shouldn't he? What did he have, 5 bogeys in the last round?
Yeah, he should have won. Didn't play the par fives well enough, did he?
Just a sort of a cleaner card and a bit more focus, and he should have won that. But he was 10-1. I suppose you could argue he was 10-1, wasn't he, last week? He's only 16s this week with all the names back up against him. So maybe he's not such great value. But he obviously, he's also got that thing about playing well the week before a major. He won the Scottish Open, didn't he, before the Open? And he played really well in the pre-major events last year. But I think he's another one who I slightly prefer for next week without giving my hand too much away. But I think next week's course should really suit him. Looking forward to next week, actually.
We won't need you next week, Dave. I'll just clip out the bits from this podcast and insert them in.
But that general warning, though, isn't it? If you do like someone for next week, just watch the market carefully because they will get cut.
They will get cut. They
I suppose
will get
the only
cut.
Thing against that is we will be offering, won't we, I guess, first six.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the terms yet, Dave. Yeah. I wouldn't like to promise anything on this podcast, but we do go black type on a number of the fancied leading contenders. So I think it's more likely to be players at 50s and 66ers that go short rather than the likes of Spieth and Dustin Johnson and Bubba Watson to a certain extent.
Yeah. But yeah. I suppose you can guarantee whoever wins this week is going to be seriously cut for next week. So say something like you fear Rose next week. You might want to sort of back him here as compensation as well. I don't know. There's certainly a case. I remember one year there was a price on Tiger winning this and the USPGA 2009. He was 7-1 to do the double, and he won this one. And then he was, I think, two shots clear. Wai Yang beat him.
Yeah,
so I was distraught. That's the easiest 7-1 I'll ever have.
Well, that was it for Tiger Woods. Wai Yang wrecked Tiger Woods' career, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
because he's never bounced back from that. I mean, obviously, I'm being facetious here, but he's never bounced back from that beating.
Well, he was unbeatable, wasn't he? There was that record where he'd won all 14 majors with the lead or co-lead going into the final round. He was leading going into the final round, and whoa, he got beaten by Wai Yang. And suddenly, well, I think it added a few percentage of doubt that, you know, the sort of mask was slipping and he wasn't unbeatable.
It was that shot on the... I know we're reminiscing here and we'll wrap this up in a second. It was that shot on the late par three. I can't remember which hole it was, where he thought he'd nailed it, didn't he? And it was all over the pin to put a bit of pressure on Yang, and it went long. I can't remember if it was the 16th or 17th, and then Yang obviously hit that incredible hybrid into the last.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was a great event, wasn't it, that one? But who would have thought at the time Tiger would never win another major?
Mm.
Anyway.
Anyway, we digress. Recap your selections then this week, Dave.
Yeah, 2 points each way. Justin Rose at 14-1. This is in the WGC Bridgestone. Also in that event, 1.5 points each way. Hideki Matsuyama at 28. Then in the Bararara Cuckoo Dada, 1 point each way. David Toms at 40-1.
Thank you, Mr. Tindall. I'm going with three picks in the Bridgestone. 1 point each way, Jim Furyk at 35s. 1 point each way, Billy Horschel at 60s, and half a point each way, Brooks Koepka at 50-1. And in the Barracuda, I like Jonas Blix to point each way at 50-1 as my sole selection. Thank you for your company, Dave. It's been a pleasure, as usual.
Yeah, cheers, Dave.
And thanks to everyone for listening. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter, at dkellner and at Dave Tindall Golf. And Mike Grenham will be back next week on the podcast. We missed him, haven't we?
We have, yeah. The third wheel in our... Well, it's like Last of the Summer Wine. We need to combo and plague. We need to metaphorically go down a hill in a bath together.
We do. He'll be back next week on the podcast. You can follow Mike on Twitter at M Grenham as well. So at D Kellner, at Dave Tindall Golf, and at M Grenham. It's the USPGA Championship next week. Looking forward to it immensely. Hopefully you've enjoyed this podcast. Tell all your friends, and we'll speak again soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.